Multi-factor authentication, self-driving cars and foldable smartphones. Sounds very technical, so Super Tim Hadikari is the technology editor at The Australian, so he's going to be my tech head. He's a tech head. How are you?
I'm good, PK. Great to be here again.
Now, these days, not only do you need a password to do your net banking, and I'm constantly forgetting mine, which drives me nuts, you might also need one of these.
The SMS code to authorize access to your bank account is 24601.
Oh, yeah. Multi-factor authentication. My favorite nine-syllable phrase. Super Tim, apparently it's not secure. What's going wrong?
Well, Patricia, there's only one singular truth in the cybersecurity world, and that is nothing is safe. There's no silver bullet. And sooner or later, someone's going to get you. And I hate to be pessimistic about it, but that's what it really is.
Okay.
Having said that, multi-factor authentication still gives you a better chance and does give you a level of safety, a better layer of safety compared to if you were just using passwords and obviously forgetting them.
So what are the risks?
Well, multi-factor authentication really relies on creating an additional validation layer over your simple password. Now, that usually comes in forms of codes that will be usually given to your phone, really is your sort of window to that world. And by and large, it works until you lose your phone or until someone else takes control of your phone, which is possible.
It will take quite a bit of coordinating.
Well, sometimes, you know, you can actually, you don't have to physically take control of your phone. You can, you know, take control of the SIM. You can, you know, you can take control of the traffic. So there are ways in which hackers can potentially subvert that protection that you have through your device. And what that does is it really raises the bar for the hackers, right? So your average hacker might not actually make the effort or to actually do all of those steps to get, you know, to compromise multi-factor authentication. And cybersecurity really is a game of about just raising the degree of difficulty. And by and large, hackers always go for the easier marks. But that doesn't mean someone who is committed and willing and certainly dedicated to breaking down your security, well, they do have the tools to do that kind of compromise.
All right, let's move to another one. Self-driving cars. I mean, we're all looking forward to kicking back in them and blasting this on the stereo.
Here in my car, I feel safest of all. I can lock all my doors. It's the only way to live in cars.
I just wanted to play that pretty good, hey? Got away with that. Look, they've caused deaths. There are problems still to iron out. Tell me about this issue of them not seeing certain people on the road. It sounds, well, obviously dangerous.
Well, it is dangerous, and this latest thing around automated cars comes from some research conducted in the U.S. and Georgia Tech, where they found that automated cars are somehow deficient in picking up pedestrians who are of a darker complexion.
So they're racist.
Well, Patricia, machines can't be racist. But
they can be programmed to be racist, can't they?
Well, that's what I was going to say, that perhaps its trainers are missing a few tricks there, you know, with regards to what they need to do. And that's what's fundamental to understanding artificial intelligence, or, you know, whether they're automated cars or any other AI or machine learning constructs that you have. I mean, they are going to replicate the behavior that's taught to them. So what we teach them is absolutely fundamental to how they behave. Now, in this case, you know, I mean, an automated car uses a number of inputs, right? It's using LiDAR, it's using a whole set of cameras to make an assessment, a visual assessment, plus whatever the software that's programmed into it to make a call, basically, on what the road situation's like, who the people are in front of it and behind it. And in this case, it would seem that the training that was provided to it was skewed more towards a particular demographic. And what that means is the machine, the algorithm, only appreciate what it's been taught. So, you know, if we had to fix this situation and say hypothetically, we fed it a million pictures of what pedestrians should look like, you know, it's got to be 50-50, or there has to be a certain level of balance in it where people of all different complexions are involved in that data that's fed into it. Now, look, this is going to be a long-running issue because, you know, people who design this software don't necessarily think like this. You know, this sort of ethical stuff is not part of their core competency. And, you know, AI and ethics is going to be a huge issue moving forward. I mean, this year, I think it's going to be one of the hottest talking points.
Yeah, I think that's right. Hey, just some breaking news on that, actually. Uber is not criminally liable in the fatal self-driving crash, but the backup driver could face charges. That's breaking news. The vehicle hit and killed a woman crossing the street in Tempe in Arizona in March last year. Are you surprised by that?
No, I'm not really surprised by that because clearly there's just not enough evidence or data there where you could, you know, do a criminal prosecution based on, you know, whether the AI worked or didn't. We're simply not advanced enough right now. We just simply don't have the rule books on how to judge these things.
So, again, we have to tread carefully, don't we?
Well, for self-driving cars or, I mean, more realistically, these sort of semi-automated cars that we're going to have, liability will still be on the person who's going to be inside these vehicles.
That's ultimately the only way it can work, really. Supratim, thanks for coming in.
Not a problem.
Supratim Attukari is technology editor at The Australian. Our tech head knows so much, that guy. He really does.